Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight, and it's an interesting show because one of my guests I haven't seen since 1972. Now, let me make sure. I'm not hearing you well enough. Okay.
Hello.
Hold on. Let me get your level up a little bit more. Should be. Oh, that's why the power's going off. But okay, there we go. Anyway, my guests are Paul Lax and Rob Waller from the group IC Hawks in LA.
Hey.
Now, Paul Lax and I went to high school together many years ago over at Loyola High. So. That's interesting, and I didn't know he played guitar. And I was at one of the reunions a few years back, and they mentioned you. They said, "You got to check out Paul. He's like a producer, and he's doing all this stuff." And okay, and I was doing another guitar show. I think when I went to the reunion. I forget when the reunion was, but anyway, eventually I got to All About Guitar, and we found each other on Facebook, and the rest is history. We finally it's taken a little while to get him there. But I finally was able to put it together, get the schedules coordinated and stuff. So I just want to welcome both of you guys. It's
Thank
great
you.
To see you,
Thank
man.
You, yeah, man. Great to see you.
It's a trip.
I recognize you immediately when I walked in.
So anyway, I want to talk a little. Well, I want to find out what the hell you've been doing for so long, and when did you start guitar and stuff? You got to give me a little bit of your background.
I started senior year at Loyola. I was basically a jock and studied, and that's all I did. Mm-hmm. It was my life. And I had knee surgery right before cross country, and so I didn't run. No
that's
running.
That's right. You ran cross country.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a very small career in cross country because I had asthma, so I ran for a little bit, and then mm-hmm. I was about it.
In L.A., in the height of smog, too. Yeah, it was probably great for the asthma. But, yeah, so I was in a cast for a couple of months, and had this guitar I'd gotten from Mike McClune's brother, and mm-hmm. Just started playing. I had nothing to do, sitting around all day, and so I just sort of taught myself at first. And actually seeing you play,
wow,
it was like, wow, someone in my class can do what the gods are doing. You know what Clapton and Hendrix are doing, and he's playing. That sounds like them. That sounds like music, and someone in my class is doing it. So it was just like, okay. I might be able to do that. So, it was...
That's
it was
so cool.
Very valuable seeing you play it.
Oh, thank you.
Seriously. It was
I never knew.
A big step. Yeah.
So what were your influences besides myself?
Jeff Floro. I copied everything he did.
But what else? You were listening to Clapton and probably Zeppelin at that point.
Not Zeppelin so much. Clapton, Clapton's probably my number one.
And okay.
I actually studied him. I would, you know, slow the record down and learn all the licks. You know, Hendrix by osmosis. And, yeah, all the guitar players of that era, including Jimmy Page and Beck.
What about
all
later?
Those people.
Because
James
playing...
Burton, big influence. At a, I got into country music in the 70s. One of my dorm mates at UCLA was a fanatical bluegrass player. So, you know... Greg Gold was also a big influence because he was pretty professional level and he just showed me everything about, you know, acoustic guitar, flap picking. So that I made this sharp turn in the, you know, country music and then would go to these bluegrass festivals and there'd be this electric band playing. And after about four festivals, I'm like, well, that guitar player is pretty good. And I walk over and at the turned out that was Emmylou Harris's hot band with James Burton. So I've been hearing James Burton at these festivals in the back of my head.
That's cool.
And so then I just dove into what he does. Mm-hmm. And he's probably my main influence for country guitar.
Because there was a big thing happening in school when we were into the folk rock and the rock like Crosby, Stills, and Nash. We were all into that stuff.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Stephen Stills.
He's brilliant. He's so underrated as far as the guitar greats. So, I love him.
Yeah, he just gets this great tone. It's just like, you know, and he's one of the guys with his Martin. He digs in with he uses his thumb. But he would dig in, and actually the guitar would get really raspy, it'd get dirty. He would make it distort. It was just like, but he had that great sound, like Black Queen.
Yeah,
that's just
incredible.
Amazing sound. Yeah. And he's just doing it by himself, but it's amazing sound. Well, that's very cool. So what... Then you went in. How did you get into production and stuff? Because I heard you were, that's what I had heard, that you were producing.
Way, way later. Okay. Much later, yeah. I didn't, I can't even remember what the first thing I actually, probably some of the Hawk stuff. You know, Rob and I would just, we were the producers, you know, and whoever, you know, and our bass player was also done a lot of producing. So we just sort of learned by making records.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a group called the Bone Daddies in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some real producers there, like Ed Cherney was produced one record, and just watching him, I probably absorbed a lot of stuff. And
yeah, he's an amazing engineer.
yeah, and a really nice guy, and it sort of grounded that too. It's like, well, he's just a regular guy, and he's getting these great sounds, and he just seems to be putting mics in front of drums, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the basics of producing, you know, put the mics in the right place, and don't tell people what to do too much, and see what happens. So
that's cool.
So it's very hands-on, you know, just our own records, you know, and my guitar instrumental band, we would produce that too. So yeah, just our own records is where I learned.
Okay, now before we get into the beginning of Icy Hawks, let's talk a little bit about your background.
Sure. I mean, I grew up in Rochester, Minnesota, and really I'm a singer, you know, like my whole thing was singing in church choir. Singing barbershop quartets, singing in a cappella groups in college. I played piano and sang. And then when I was in college, you know, I sort of, like a lot of people, like it got pulled into a band, you know, in my dorm at Duke University. The guys are down there like, you're the singer, man. Like, come sing in our room, you know, and play these songs with us. And we'll get some of the girls to come down and listen to the songs. So I started doing that and joining a band. And then I started picking up a guitar and trying to really, for me, like guitar was to write songs, you know, more than to be like, I feel like, you know, like the hearing in my right ear is like pretty much gone because I've always had like a burning lead guitar player to my right.
And my left ear's gone from too much crash cymbal.
I know that. I've experienced that myself. Well, that's cool. So what were your influences?
I mean, for, you know, like everything. I mean, like I grew up, you know, I went to high school in the 80s in Minnesota, you know, so I was like into heavy metal music, you know. I mean, I was, you know, into hair bands in the 80s. Like, that's what we liked. I went to Guns N' Roses concerts.
And, oh, cool.
But I, you know, I also liked all the classic rock stuff. You know, I liked The Who and I liked The Beatles and I liked The Stones. And I like, but as a songwriter, maybe Bob Dylan and stuff. And it wasn't until I was, you know, in my later 20s that I moved to Los Angeles and I started getting into sort of California country music and Buck Owens and Dwight Yoakam and starting to listen to, and meeting Paul and starting to sort of explore that whole tradition, the Birds, the Eagles, yeah. and we're the Hawks. So we sort of fit somewhere in that tradition of kind of folk rock California country sound, which is, you know, not like Nashville. It's a little bit more irreverent, but we've really work on vocal harmonies. And
so how did you guys get together?
I was in a band in San Francisco called The Magic of Television with Paul's brother Anthony in the mid-90s, and then we came down to Los Angeles. We played some shows with Double Knot Spycar, Paul's instrumental yeah. guitar band, and I guess that's when I met you.
The T-Mod, or Magic of Television, it's a great band. I was a huge fan. Really clever songwriting. Very rootsy, but mm-hmm. experimental at the same time, but catchy. And so I was a big fan, and we tried to do shows whenever we could. And you guys were sort of heading in a country direction.
We were starting to. We'd sort of discovered Graham Parsons, you know, as the 18 millionth people to discover Graham Parsons, and started to go in that direction. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
I would sit in on lap steel.
You'd play lap steel.
Yeah, now, Pat told me about that. You're really good at lap steel.
I have my own approach for sure. But Rob was, we did some real stone country, some Merle Haggard song or something, and I'm like, this guy can really sing country. I just heard all the, you know, the mm-hmm, experimental mm-hmm. pop stuff. It's like, oh my God, he's got a stone country voice. And so it was on my brother Anthony's 30th birthday. We were up in the high desert, you know, in an altered state of consciousness, and we're like, you know, complaining about the state of, you know, modern country music. It's like, we're going to start a band, and it's going to have a throwback.
Called Icy Hawks in L.A.
It's going to be called Icy Hawks in L.A., and we're going to write, you know, a different type of song, you know.
And that was that'll be 20 years ago in March.
Wow.
Oh my God.
And so
right.
we've been a band for 20 years now and made 8 records and toured all over Europe multiple times and America and, like, the altered state vision somehow happened.
Paid off.
Sort of.
Well, yeah. Pay being a relative term.
Well, let me play a clip. I'm going to play the title track from their new album, Live and Never Learn. And if I'm not seeing the video feed. I'm looking for it. It might be down. I know that Facebook gets touchy. So, but anyway, this is from Live and Never Learn. This is the title track. Now, I'm not playing all the vocal stuff because the show is focused on guitar, and I'm pulling clips. The songs are songs. So I'm let everybody know right now. They're definitely full-blood songs that you know, he's singing and there's lyrics and stuff. But I pulled this one. I like interesting because there's a pedal steel solo and it's amazing.
Oh, he's brilliant. Yeah,
this
we got to talk about
this monster.
Guy. Yeah, he's a
and
monster.
And then there's electric guitar solo and then there's an acoustic guitar solo. So there's like all three flavors. So you have all the basic food groups in there, which I like. So here is, let me play this. Grab, you guys have your headphones. So here's Live and Never Learn.
So we live. Never learn. Oh, live and never learn. Just find another bridge to burn. Try so hard to do what's right, but that won't get me through Friday night when old Scratch whispers in my ear and the beatitude drown in my beer. So I live and never learn. Oh, live. scratch each table with a broken knife. Every sentence, every slight, every way I treated her unkind, every promise I knew.
That's just 100% pure taste. I mean, all that. I love that electric guitar, Lee. That's you?
The electric lead, yeah.
And what are you using?
My Tele. Okay. A little bit of delay, probably.
What amp?
Princeton Reverb.
Old one?
Yeah, it's a transition year. It's with a aluminum little.
You have the little border.
The aluminum border.
Oh, very cool.
It's a great sounding amp. I use it 99% of the time.
And that's just everything. Turned up, right? You're not using any type of pedal on that?
I have a box of rock, you know that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just turn up the gain on it.
Just to
push the amp a little, yeah. But it's not really...
Because that tone
is great.
It's
not distorted. Yeah, I try to bring it to the... If it's sustaining a bit, then it's like, okay, that's...
When we were mixing that song, I kept telling Paul to turn up those licks. And you were like, I don't know. And I'm like, turn them up, man. Like, those licks have to be louder.
Yeah. That's a good call. That's a general pattern. To me, it's like... I kind of have the opposite. I'm usually kind of lowering my parts in the mix just because... Rob and I are songwriters. My first allegiance is probably to the song.
Yeah, those licks are James Burton-y kind of licks.
That's James Burton, yeah.
Yeah, no, he does a lot of different things. He'll rock out, too. There's some ones where he's really going. He's getting more bluesy.
But and his tone, when he's got the, just on the edge of, it's just humming and overdriven a little. It's not distorted, really. That's the sweet spot.
I agree that the taste of the tone and the licks themselves in the spots, the taste is magnificent.
One of the things I noticed on this album that was really cool is, and I'll play some clips of it, is the interplay between the steel guitar and your guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys go play, you're playing at the same time, and it's the way you counterpoint, it really works, and it's unique in one way because you guys are not playing the same thing. It's not like double leads or, you know, where you're playing harmonically the same. You're playing different against each other, but it works really well.
And that guy, that's Dave. We call him Dave Zerbel, but I think he pronounces it Zerbel. He's a Northern California steel guy. And
he played with Magic of Television originally back in the 20 years ago. And he plays with a lot of people, but he's a master. I mean, he's a studied, aggressive master.
Yeah. I mean, he's doing really cool licks.
He'll do whatever you want him to do. It's scary.
He's, you know, a lot of guys will, you know, they'll do like little pads or something. They'll do some cool things.
Yeah.
And I remember the guy they used, I forget his name, that Alan Parsons used on some of his albums. He did some really cool harmonic things, bending up way in time. But this guy's like playing. He's jamming some notes in there, but it works. Yeah. And it's really good, and it's really an aggressive type of sound. He's just tasty.
I think Buddy Cage might have been an influence on him. And Garcia, Jerry Garcia's steel playing, I think Dave would say was an influence.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the classic Nashville guys.
Well, he gets that tone, too. What was he using?
Shoot, I should know. It's a custom one. I should know the name of it, but I forget.
Is it a Mullen?
Nope.
A Showbud?
Nope. It's a... If you keep
Emmons?
No, but I think he has an Emmons. It's kind of like an Emmons style, I would say, though.
Okay.
That's probably closer to describing.
And then what amp did he use?
I think it was just a... I think he had... I believe it was his solid-state amp. A lot of steel guys like a solid-state amp. I could be completely wrong. I just drove up to his... He lives up in Northern California, and I think he cut all those parts for the whole record in 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
Just one after the other. He'd do three takes, and I'm like, we're good. I could get you the amp info, but...
Let me know. I'm curious.
I'll text him right now.
Oh, yeah. Rob's going to text him.
His tone is just amazing.
It's gorgeous. It's whatever you want out of him, too. He'll dig in. He'll be completely ethereal if you want, like a cloud, if you tell him that. It's scary working with him.
Well, now, talking about recording this now, In terms of the electric guitar and the steel guitar, how did you mic that? Did
you pull 57?
57,
right on the speaker.
Right on the speaker. So everything's
close. Maybe 3 inches away. That's all I've ever done. And you can, I mean, you hear about all these exotic techniques for miking an amp, and to me, it's a degraded signal anyway. It's crunched and it's a limited frequency range, and there's no such thing as hi-fi if it's an electric instrument. So. If I thought it needed more than a 57 straight
in. It sounds pretty full, but even that you did the same thing with the steel guitar?
Just 57? A 57 right at the speaker.
No, I've done the three mics.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
I should try it. I just,
you know. Now, with the acoustic guitar, what was the guitar you used on that one?
It was this guitar and Rob's guitar, these guitars. On a couple, I used a Guild F-350 because it had a pickup. Like on the opening track, Ballad for the Trees, it's an unusual sound because, and you know, Royer or Mojave large diaphragm mics. Mm-hmm. They were called Royer back then. They're both prototype.
Yeah.
But they're Dave Royer, mm-hmm. large diaphragm. Through probably Great River preamps in the Pro Tools.
Okay.
That's how we do all acoustic guitars. But I used the Guild because it had a pickup in it, and so I mic'd it, and I also ran a line into the next room into my Princeton with a lot of vibrato on it. So what you're hearing on the rhythm part is a pretty even blend of, you know, I never thought I would do this, an acoustic guitar pickup through a very processed electric amp.
Oh, that's
but the,
cool.
I really like the blend on that. But other than that, it's just, you know.
The Guild's nice. I don't know if you remember when we were in high school, the 12-string I was using was a Guild F-112.
Classic.
That thing sounds. I still have it.
They're beautiful. Great. Those are phenomenal guitars.
So, but the acoustic guitar. Now, did you're using the Mojave. How far is the mic from that?
I would say I always aim here, like, at the neck, it's probably about 5-6 inches away.
Really? That close?
Pretty close, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good... I mean, I'm amazed how full... it's a great guitar. You have a great guitar. Your guitars sound good, period. Even in here, when you guys were warming up and tuning up, they sounded good. But I'm amazed because in recording, a lot of times, I would get more out of it about 2 feet away. Now, I was in a studio...
Right.
Where we had a room. I know, like, were you recording at a studio or recording in your house?
We recorded it's a studio in our house. It's very small. The room's been treated, you know, we put up.
But it's pretty dead, right?
It's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have a good live room.
You want that.
With floors, it really makes a difference.
Want a little bit of that room.
But the tone of your guitar, both of you. I mean, the rhythm guitar, too, it's really full.
Thank you.
Cool, thanks.
And did you do the mixing?
No. A guy named Alfonso Rodenas, who's he's a Grammy-winning producer who just took a liking to us. He gives us a phenomenal rate, and we love him. We're very good friends. And
because that's another thing. There's a lot going on in the songs, and it's clear. I can hear everything. I hear all the parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I agree with you. I love that your electric guitar stuff, I can always hear it louder.
Yeah.
But that's not a criticism. I just like guitar,
sure,
you know.
Right.
But, I mean, everything is clear in the mix. This album is very clean. I mean, that's...
Thank you.
And that's a trick. There's a trick to that.
It's hard to do. Yeah. It's hard
to
do.
You have a lot of stuff going on.
He's won Grammys with Los Tigres del Norte. He's, like, their main mixer for that band, which is a lot different than ours. But he just, like, I mean, and sometimes we're like, is the bass too loud? Is it, you know, like, we have our opinions or whatever.
Our annoying opinion.
But he just makes the whole thing kind of, there's that clarity in the sort of dynamic range and the EQs of all the instruments, and how he manages to do that, I'm not quite sure, but he really does.
See, a lot of, I think, in CDs and digital, the bass can be a little more out of control. You can kick it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you remember, I don't know, have these albums been released on vinyl?
No, Rob did a solo record that's vinyl, and my other bands have done vinyl. Yeah, you can't have that intense bass.
You can't have that. Yeah, you have to. Jump. Yeah, it'll fly off the thing, and so there's a different type of sound.
Right.
The bass is rolled off a little, but it doesn't go as deep because it literally can't handle it. So there's a, and that's a whole different. But they make it sound full, but not it's not that deep. And there's an art to that. A lot of that's yes. the mastering engineer.
Right.
But a lot of engineers, of the old school engineers, know how to do that. And but the no, it sounds really full. I mean, it's not too bottom heavy, but it's there.
Yeah.
And the thing is a lot of it too. I'm going to play this clip where they shows the interaction between. I'm going to play Planet Earth, a clip from there. But even I think it's in Planet Earth, the bass is doing some interesting stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. all of you guys are doing lines. It's like counterpoint. You know,
it's counterpoint. That's yeah. exactly right. Yeah.
So let me play this Planet Earth, and then I want to talk a little bit about how you put it together, your philosophy in arranging it and stuff like that, because it all is important. While you're singing this thing, you're going through this, you know, verse or whatever, and there's all this stuff happening
yeah.
behind you. And it's interesting how it's, because it's not the same. It's not like just strumming guitar and singing a song. There's mm-hmm. all this interaction going on, and they're playing against each other. And I think that's not easy to do it tastefully. I mean, on an extreme level, and you're doing some pretty interesting vocal things. It's not just monotone, but like, for example, in prog rock, like Yes, they have all these guys. It's like everybody's playing totally different stuff, and it fits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now his vocal is pretty simple. He doesn't do a lot because all this stuff is happening behind him, and you got to give it space. But you guys are doing interactive stuff similar in a way, but it all fits, and you're actually doing more. There's more to the lyric and stuff, mm-hmm. and rhythmically and melodically. And the way it plays against each other, I think that's unique. I'm not hearing that a lot in a lot of songs. So let's take a listen, and this is Planet Earth. And let's take a listen to this, and you tell me, I want to get a little bit into your arranging style and stuff. So here's Planet Earth.
Thought I saw a magical train. It was just a long shopping mall in the rain. From the corner of my eye to a wish in my brain that turns a shopping mall into a train. It's easy, so easy. I was a little bit edgy cause I had my mama's pills in the trunk of my car. She was overzealous. Pain remained, but not with her. I guess I need a little something to live on planet Earth. Planet Earth. On planet Earth. Planet Earth. Saw a trail running off into the hills. I pulled over my car and got the good kind of chills. To make the turn, to take the chance, live a life up in the rafters on planet Earth. Planet Earth.
So that first verse, it's the acoustic guitar is playing that main riff, do-do-do-do-do-do, mm-hmm. whatever. And then the steel guitar comes in, and he's playing around while you're
singing. But that's you playing lap steel.
No, that's Dave.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Oh,
when
yeah.
When he does those chords and resolves, yeah. It has to be pedal steel. No, that's there's no Dave, way you can sure. do that.
Okay. I only played lap steel on one song on this record.
Which one?
Victoria's Song.
Spinning. He's playing some licks like yours, though.
I know. Yeah,
but he does like that stuff. He'll do like a chord and then just fly.
He could play my licks with one hand behind his back.
But and he's using a little bit of delay on there. Because I can hear it. It's a slight.
That would be Alfonso putting that on.
That's post. Okay.
If you were in the mixing sessions, when he stops, there's like a chung, chung, chung. He has a surprising amount of delay, but he puts it at a level where you're not that aware of it. It's one of the things I really like about it. He'll make it sound full, and you're not even sure why.
Well, it doesn't get out of control. Yeah. And he's Dave is doing these like radical things. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you're playing guitar, and when the second verse comes in, I think, and you're doing the electric guitar, you're doing that.
Same lick on electric, yeah.
And that's the telly, right?
Telly.
So you're doing that, and he's playing around it. And then when you get to the acoustic guitar, you're playing totally, not against each other, but you're playing totally different stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's doing like he'll go and he'll slide into these chords, and he just goes.
And then the bass is doing melodic kind of stuff.
Yeah. So it's more than just it's three parts going, doing different things.
Yeah.
But it works. And that's, to me, that's not easy to do to make that work harmonically without it getting mushy and clashing and, you know, it's all fitting in.
It's a fine line. I mean, that arrangement in particular now does seem pretty dense to me, more than, especially, I mean, we play it live.
And it's a simple song.
The structure.
You know, but I mean, I think most of that is Paul. I mean, because both when you're playing the parts and when you're recording Dave, and then editing and making the choices. Because, like, the way the process works is, like, Paul will also weed through those. And then when we give it to the mixer, it's already been pruned. You know, so it's like, well, there's this part here, there's this part here. So it's been arranged. And most of that's Paul.
So you pretty much edit to what you want in there. You don't put any extra stuff.
Yeah. It's
also to save time and to save money.
Oh, no, I get
oh,
that,
yeah, but you don't want to hand the... Yeah, I mean, Alfonso is very kind with what he's doing anyway, so I don't want to have any, which take do we use? It's done. Yeah. And that's our philosophy generally. We want the mixer to only mix. We have the elements picked out. This is how the song sounds. Make it sound really good, you know,
right.
With whatever compression, all that stuff.
Yeah, and the mixing's critical for all those parts.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. You hear everything. And like you said, that bass part is, you can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
It's up enough where it's doing its job. It's
right.
Not just buried, you know. It's not a busy bass part that's like he's
pushing. And Paul Marshall, our bass player, is a guitar player. I mean, he was the guitar player in the Strawberry Alarm Clock with Ed King. Mm-hmm. Andy was the lead singer. So he came to bass playing in country music sort of later in his, you know, music career. I mean, I guess after he'd already been in a band, you know, a big famous, you know, rock and roll band in the Strawberry Alarm Clock. So you hear some of that sometimes, you know, he plays the bass like a guitar player, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Hendrix did that too. He would do these lines.
He'd play bass on a lot of his stuff, right?
Yeah, but he would set up those really bizarre bass lines, but it fit with what he mm-hmm. was doing guitar-wise, which was kind of cool. Now, so how do you approach... Now, well, let me ask you this. It's like taking a song like that, how do you do that live?
It's pretty full-sounding live.
Do you have all those instruments?
No. Oh, no.
We don't have the steel.
We're a four-piece, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, there's... Like, on that song, there's Rob's acoustic, my acoustic, some electric layered in, and the steel, whereas live, it's just either two acoustic guitars or acoustic
and
electric.
Bass.
Mm-hmm. Bass and drums, yeah. And our drummer, Victoria, my wife, who's our secret weapon, she's a...
She's
groove
great, though.
Monster.
There's some stuff on here that's just amazing. She's a great
drummer. Yeah, she just makes it sound big and full. And she's a songwriter, so she's hearing the whole song, you know, as opposed to what drum.
Well, I think that's important because the fact that you're all songwriters, you know how to bring out the lyric. And I think the music does accent what you're saying.
I do too.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's, again, that's not, you know, in rock bands, it's like Marshall blast and you're singing. The lyric isn't as important,
right?
You know, so, well, listen, you guys want to play something live?
Sure.
So we get a feel of what the live thing is like. And then I'm going to pan you guys a little bit to give you like a stereo.
Want to do a wine cross or something?
Sure.
What do you think?
So that's a Martin, right?
Yeah, D18.
D18.
I got it.
And that's an Alvarez. Is that an old one?
It's an old one. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this, you know, I got this guitar kind of on a whim in Memphis in like 1995. And, you know, it was like a $500 guitar. And it's just been the guitar that I've played and take everywhere. And I've never been afraid of like it getting stolen or anything. But it also just is like my favorite guitar.
Well, did that come with the electronics?
Yeah.
It's got a pickup system. And then what about yours? Does yours have a pickup system in it?
No.
Okay, so you just mic it live?
Yeah, and we don't, I rarely play with it live. If it's a real acoustic room with mics, which I love to do, it's still my favorite guitar, but I have my Guild has a Fishman pickup in it.
That's the 350?
The Guild, yeah. The F-350, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, yeah. So use that live.
It's funny.
Do you use the Tele live?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I've used that. I bought that guitar in 1975 in New York City, and it's been my guitar since. I've had a few others, but
How old is this guy?
I think it's a 68 or a 66. I'm really not sure. 68 or 66.
That's golden age.
I bought it at West LA Music.
Oh, wow.
It was totally beat up. They said
back then it was beat up?
Back then it was beat up, yeah. They wanted $250, and I'm like, with my buddy, and we're like, that's kind of a great deal, right? So I go, okay, I'll give you $225. The guy goes, okay. So I'm walking out with it, and the manager comes out and starts screaming at the salesman, "What did you just do?" So we made a quick exit. But yeah,
okay, this is White Cross, which is from this album too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Saw her on St. James Street. She looked the other way. Now all the uptown hustlers say dealer's been delayed. Good friend, if you're a gambler, don't bet on me too long. The angels said they'd love me, even though I took their song. So I do another white cross. That's the country blues. It's the only thing I ever learned to do. Good times didn't suit me. I had the taste of pain. In the Oyster Palace back room where night was always day. Played a little guitar. Held a lot of stuff. With the spirits round my ankles. Like the Mississippi mud. So I do another white cross. That's the country blues. It's the only thing I ever learned to do. Critical Moore.
First one goes down bitter, then you kind of like the taste. Someone has to lose, payback happens every day. If you play the devil's music, it likes to come along. I know the angels love me, even though I did them wrong. On a hill I see a white cross, I sing the country blues. It's the only thing I'll never, ever lose. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Sounds great. Those guitars sound amazing. We're almost out of time. I want to play one other thing real quick because I wanted to know what you did on it. There's some bizarre little things that you were doing. And just to kind of show them a little more of the electric thing that you're doing here. This clip is Stoned with Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I thought this might make
I edited parents. This together. So there's like the electric guitar lead at the beginning, and then I crossfaded into this ending section. And I think I'm hearing the lap steel. Were you playing lap on that?
There would be pedal steel, if any. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe.
And then you're doing something. It sounds like a phase shifter, like a real extreme phase shifter in it, because it comes in and out. It's like squeezing the tone. And well, let me play it for you, because we don't have a lot of time. But let me play this. This is Stone with Melissa.
I got Stone with Melissa.
So you got that? You have that, like, there's something. It sounds like a lap steel.
There's no steel on that song. No,
so you're playing slide?
It's just different type. No, there's no slide. It's just electric guitar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's no.
And then you're doing. There's something like. It sounds like it's a phase shift.
I think it's backwards.
Oh yes,
I think it's backwards.
There was moments where I would just, you know, in Pro Tools, it's just so easy. You take a section, you flip it, and so yeah, there was. It was just basically layering mini parts.
It was very cool. Yeah. It's like, this is, yeah. I got to ask about this because it was some cool, you're doing some cool effects in
there. Thanks. And it's this one pedal too. What's it called? I'm terrible with this kind of stuff, but it does one thing well. It does this sort of flanging, yeah. weird sweep, and that's all it does. I actually took it off my pedal board because it only does one thing.
But it's a great sound.
It's a cool sound for yeah.
And then for the electric guitar at the beginning, what were you? Were you just the amp dimed up the Princeton, or did you use an overdrive?
It's probably the Box of Rock. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It might have been a
because it's a great sound.
There's a slight chance it was a fuzz pedal. This friend of mine, Joe Berardi, has a company called F Hole, mm-hmm. and I use his fuzz pedal mm-hmm. whenever it calls for fuzz. He's a really cool pedal maker. It might have been the F Hole. Fuzz pedal too,
because it sounds like the amp just going. I mean, I usually get that sound by just turning it up.
I don't think it's. I think it's probably because it's in our house. It's probably just my Princeton. Not a really high volume, and it's probably more.
No, it's got it. It's a good sound. That's the telly, right?
That's the telly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen. I told you it'd go by real fast.
Yeah, man, that was great. I love the questions.
Let us know where you're playing if you can give them dates. The website is www.ichawks.com.
That's right. I think our next gig is at the Viper Room.
Believe it or not, I know.
Never ventured into Hollywood.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm going to have you play out. Play a song out. Okay. But
on January 12th is our next gig.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, as I said, we ran out of time. I knew it would go by fast, but this means you have to come back. Yeah. Oh, and I still want to do the other group, too.
Yeah. It's a whole different kettle of fish.
So definitely have that'll happen, and then we should do. Any plans on another album coming out soon?
We've got a collaboration with an English group called The Good Intentions that we're trying to finish up maybe by the summer, and we're going back to England in July. So that's sort of our next.
Well, let me know if you guys if you're doing that. Let's get you guys back in, and we can talk about that album.
Yeah, yeah, that's very acoustic-y, very.
That should be interesting.
Yeah, a very different animal.
Very acoustic dominated. Yeah.
Well, no, Rob and Paul, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. Finally, see you again.
Yeah, man, great
stay
to
in
see
touch.
You. Yeah, yeah.
Everybody, what do you want to take us out with?
What do you want to take us out with?
What do you think, Rob? I'm out of ideas. What do you think?
New Kind of Lonely.
Okay, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next week. And here's A Little Kind of Lonely.
T-D-4. Our favorite young couple by to watch some TV. Felt the strange loneliness so soon after their joy. Yeah. Matrimony, it was a rocking wedding. All the friends came in from out of town. Now they feel like they're letting everybody down. There's a new kind of lonely sitting right next to you. There's a new kind of lonely. Oh, but even the sky's blue. Randy went out, got wasted. Chasing skirts and getting hurt, re-collapsing. All the young man's joy. Mona stayed home, slept with the cat. Tired of wandering, Randy. Finally come back. There's a new kind.
sitting